welcome to LOA Today.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
With me today is life coach and LOA teacher, Joel Elston.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
Joel, before we got started, just a moment ago, I mentioned to you, you know, we're doing the show on society's expectations, and you jumped right in with, oh, I've got so many things going on right now. So the first thought that goes to my mind is we usually go like, you know, hour five, hour 10. We could be going longer than that. So I'm just going to put a little disclaimer to the audience. This one may go long, just letting you guys know.
No, it's, you know, that societal expectations and expectations in general. They are a recipe for disaster as far as like being disappointed. Yeah. And particularly when you're constantly filtering through, you know, I had multiple meetings this past year with families and college age kids. And there's a new dynamic in college right now. There's a lot of young people getting out of high school that are saying, look, college isn't making much sense to me right now. It's just, there's, unless they have a very specific thing, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a CPA, I want an attorney or something along those lines, just going for a general business degree or whatever, it's sort of lost its flavor for a lot of people. And the families that I meet with, they understand the concept that there's ways to make a lot of money. Like, you know, UPS drivers could be making 175 grand a year in 4 years. And, you know, put in 25 years with UPS, you're still a young man. You know, you could be, you know, 43 years old, have a couple million dollars saved and have great retirement at 43 years old. I mean, it's a really, really cool thing. So it often comes down to the families are like, they'll say this, but it's everybody's expectation he goes to college. We want to be able to post on Facebook that our son was accepted to the University of Virginia. We the expectations of our peers is our son's going to go to college, and the ones that don't go to college, they whisper behind their back. And I said, well, you know that because you're the ones whispering behind the back, and why you know that. So expectations, you know, for your kids and. That's one of the hardest things as parents that we deal with is you have your expectations as a parent, as a kid. And up until about 11, 12 years old, the kids are pretty compliant and on board with your expectations. And then, you know, the estrogen starts pumping or the testosterone starts pumping and you have a whole different mindset. And the kids are not necessarily going to live up to your expectations. And they're going to, at that point, they sort of have their own journey. So expectations in relationships, expectations and at work, it just creates expectation, always creates disappointment. And that's really important.
And to understand. So far, you've been talking about the expectations of individuals. We haven't even touched on society's expectations yet.
Exactly. And so you look at the origins of the individual expectations, and then you compound that with societal expectations of whatever category, and you get behavior that is basically just redundant over and over and over because people are expecting, society expects you to be a certain way or think a certain way. It's fascinating, and I think with the internet becoming such a big force in our life and social media, expectations, you know, they're evolving. Sometimes you're increased societal expectations. Half of my young females that I work with, the expectations of Instagram, what the perfect body looks like, or the expectations of all. So expectations in today's world have really been increased, and along with that, correspondingly, disappointment is increased as well because the perfect is the goal now. Good is no longer acceptable. The expectation of perfect deletes good as something that we want. And that's a dangerous slippery slope that we're on right now.
Oh, it's very dangerous. And what's worse is that it's impossible because I don't think anybody can define what perfect is. You'll get, you know, ask 10 different people what perfect is, you'll get 10 different answers.
Oh, absolutely.
So not only are we aiming for something that you can't reach, but you can't even say what it is.
Well, and you know, and just to go ahead and get it out there, because it's going to be that this kind of show, so probably some offensive stuff coming up for some people. But you know, the idea that when you, you know, during the COVID drama and all that, what there was a narrative that was going on, and if you didn't say the narrative exactly right, you were oh my gosh, you no. You're questioning the vaccine. No, it's like, I'm not, not because I don't believe in vaccines, but there are some questions, and you couldn't ask those questions. You couldn't, you know, you anything that didn't go against the thing that you got to wear a mask and you got to do these things, that you were just labeled crazy because it didn't match what they were selling. And as time has gone on from then, from that time, we're you know, a lot of the questions that were being asked right now are sort of being proven true. And you know, it's just like, wow, wait a minute. We should be able to allow to have dialogue and not be canceled because you don't say things the society expects you to say anymore.
There's a really important point in here that I want to make sure we bring out, which is why these societal expectations exist. They exist primarily, if you're going to group them into one thing, which I'm going to do in a moment, because that's what I do. They exist primarily because of fear.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
whenever society is said to expect something, it's because some person or group or large group even in society is fearful of something.
Yes.
And they figure that the expectation helps them to, in some way, circumvent or overcome the source of that fear.
Yes.
Isn't it interesting how rare that is to be true?
Yes. Yes. And that's something that's very important. The, you know, like you're saying, there is a playbook now. There's no bio-individuality. There's no, you know, this is that way for everything. For example, here's one that's really going to, the concept of evolution, Darwin's theories. Mm-hmm. All right. Years ago, when they said, okay, this is guaranteed. This is now science. Darwin's theory is true. Evolution is it. There's no room for discussion on anything else. Mm-hmm. And so any doctor, any philosopher that just even went on the fringe of that and said, well, you know, I mean, can we at least discuss other possibilities? Is there, you know, there's some, and it, you just society, the medical society, the ones that write the rules, say, no, you cannot. You can't discuss various things in the medical society, you know, from their, you know, acupuncture, that's not real medicine. Energy healing, that's not real medicine. There's certain things that you just get put out there that you can't discuss because the expectations, like you're saying, there's people that are fearful. You know, years ago, doctors, the AMA, basically made claims that chiropractic was useless for, you know, doctors doing chiropractic surgery. Oh, yeah. And the chiropractor sued with evidence of, you know, their energy alignment of the spine working. And it was really bad because the doctors were scared that natural healing with non-invasive healing would actually interfere with them. The psilocybin that I'm advocating for therapeutic use, Big Pharma is scared to death of that because this is a naturally occurring substance that is dramatically far more effective than any antidepressant at working on depression, PTSD, anxiety, and it literally changes the structure of the brain by creating higher incidence of neuroplasticity. So all that being said, the expectations are, there's fear behind set expectations, as you said. Fear almost always drives that.
It's also worthwhile, I believe, to look at who is advocating the fear, who is pushing the fear button. Because it isn't just that there are people who are afraid. I mean, certainly, you know, you mentioned the pandemic. Certainly, billions of people were afraid. I mean, this was not a small, isolated incident. This was a global incident where billions of people were truly afraid. I mean, that was what kept them in their homes. That's what made the lockdown work. The part that is overlooked and I think is often missing is the part that talks about who was pushing the buttons. What buttons were they pushing and why were they pushing them? What was the motivation behind them? We like to think that the motivation was good, that it was for the benefit of society, that it was for the good of all people to maintain health levels and all that kind of thing. But there's also a more cynical side of it. The more cynical side includes things like, well, what's profitable for the pharmaceuticals?
Right.
What's more important? Is it keeping people alive and healthy, or is it making sure that the hospitals don't fill up? In many people's minds, the two are equivalent, mm-hmm. but they really aren't equivalent. In fact, right. the pandemic showed us that they are opposite to each other, because the priority was to keep the hospitals from filling up. And I say that they were the opposite because in order to keep the hospitals from filling up, they scared the people to death. That's why billions of people were afraid. They yes. were absolutely terrified during the pandemic.
Yes.
And the whole reason I bring that up is medical science knows and has known for over 50 years that it is imperative that you treat situations as positively and with as positive a viewpoint as you can, because placebo has an effect. And
absolutely.
The converse side of it is nocebo has an effect.
Nocebo
meaning the idea that if you put into someone's mind the idea that they're going to get sick or die or whatever, that they're going to tend more in that direction. Both of those things have effect. It's the reason why placebo is filtered out of double-blind placebo-controlled studies, because they know it has an effect. But they deliberately excluded that during the pandemic because the priority was keeping the hospitals from filling up.
Right.
So fear was being driven by keep the hospitals from filling up at the cost of something we can't measure because nobody was studying it. But some percentage of people, some number of people got sicker. Some number of people died because of that policy. So there was yeah. a trade-off there, and it was a really unfortunate. It was a very unhappy trade-off. I mean, how Absolutely. Many stories did we hear about people, particularly people who had, because the one thing with the COVID was if you had another condition, a secondary right. condition of some kind, you were much more vulnerable, much more likely to get sick, much more likely to succumb to it. How many stories did we hear of people who were in isolation, who were elderly or who had a secondary condition, and they were basically withering away because they had no human contact?
In my field in particular, one of the things that happened horribly during the pandemic is they shut down 12-step meetings, support groups for addicts. They shut down mental health support groups. They shut down, like in my industry of, being a life coach / therapist, most therapists went totally virtual. Now, I never missed a day's work and never wore a mask once. So that's different.
We always knew you were the exception. I mean, that was
I was laughing yeah. at the concept of like I couldn't sit home all day anyway. So that's crazy. But the idea that we had a lot of suicides. Addiction rates soared. We during the pandemic. I lost 3 or 4 clients during the pandemic. I don't remember the exact timing. Four people committed suicide around the pandemic, and one overdosed. And it just the isolation of that. The gym shut down. One of the things I've really been pushing for here in Virginia is after that whole event, what they did when the gyms closed. I've mentioned more than once in the show, exercise to me is the ultimate antidepressant, anti-anxiety remedy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm lobbying to get somebody to sponsor a bill that I've written to make it, if a doctor says you need to be in the gym for mental health, that the government cannot ban you from that. Because I'd say mental health, the people in the gym tend to be healthier. They tend to not succumb to things. They've been in the gym for a while. So I felt the isolation of that was my main gym was closed. So I literally paid a guy off the books to allow me to go use his gym privately wow. during the 2 months it was closed. Wow. So that's just how much that means to me. It was something that I was going to do. Exercise, old people, not have elderly people in homes, not having contact. You're not dealing with the mental health. I think societal expectations during that period of time did not prepare I'm dealing with it now. The kids that were, you know, 12 years old during that time, there's a different batch of kids coming up now. They've got a lot of neurotic behavior, a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. A lot of them are still really isolated. They were locked. I mean, it affects people in a way that we don't know yet. I see it in my work, but I think going forward, as I said, sociologists will really be able to point out this was a drastic twist. In Virginia, we have these ridiculous SOL tests, you know, standard of learning. They test every year to see where you're at. I'm not a big fan of those. But one thing is indicating that the pandemic, we had a big dip in that rate. I mean, we really went down. The kids lost a lot. They did this online school stuff that was really pathetic. It didn't really work well. They tried their best. I'm not critical of the school. But, yeah. You know, in retrospect, societal expectations ruled the pandemic. And the people that get to dictate the societal expectations are, you know, that's what I like to find out is when the origins are always fear-based. And, you know, on a conspiracy theory, it always felt to me, this is like a big experiment by the government. What if we shut everybody down? How will they respond? I think that might have been part of the conversation too.
You really do.
Wow. I think the government has always sort of alluded to what happens if this happens. Let's see how they respond. Let's throw a bunch of money at them and see if we can control them that way. I don't know the exact reasons for that. I have no proof of that. That's a conspiracy theory of mine. But I think they. Yeah, they just wanted to see what would happen. And I think it was a total failure. I think it messed people up a lot.
It did mess people up. Yeah, and it continues to, by the way.
I agree.
It's not like the effects of that have all gone away.
No, it's
and by
not.
The effects, I don't mean COVID itself. I mean, because COVID itself hasn't gone away either. But it's very evident to anyone walking around in society today that the fear is still there, because I just look around and I see how many people are still wearing masks.
Yeah.
Masks have been optional now for well over a year, but there are people who literally today will wear a mask if they're afraid that, you know, somebody might have something and they want to make sure they're protected because they need to be able to go to the relative's house on the weekend or something like that.
Extrapolating conspiracy theory further, or maybe causation, not making sense here, but this is an observation. I mean, I have noticed the last, you know, year, 6 months in particular, we have a lot more respiratory viruses, a lot more non-COVID, non-flu. During that period of time where we were wearing masks, again, when everyone else was wearing masks and everybody was, you know, sanitizing the gym, you know, you have to wipe down antibacterially everything in the gym every time you used it, all that stuff. So those are things that usually tax the immune system, allows your body to fight off those minor germs. They strengthen your immune system. Well, right. When you get too sanitary, too clean, the immune system doesn't get exercised. So one of my theories is this drastic increase of respiratory viruses goes back to that period of time. You know, I mean, we're in the gym and that's gone away a lot. There's still some people wiping down their machines a lot, doing all stuff. Most people are just still working out normally and they're back to it. But those are all things that could have been affected by this. And I find it fascinating that, you know, that when you have a kid, you know, kids that grow up digging in the dirt, you know, eating poop or dog poop out of the dirt, not realizing it. You know, it sounds horrible, but that's really strengthening the immune system. Dirt and germs make the immune system grow. When you sanitize everything, you don't tax the immune system, it becomes weaker.
But by the way, I just want to throw out there, we are not advocating letting your kid eat crap out of the dirt, literally, because that is not healthy for you. We're not saying, that's how you can get some pretty serious diseases. We're simply saying, don't be afraid of it. Don't be terrified of it.
I Walt's not advocating for it, but hey.
Okay. I'll go a step further. The reason I'm putting a disclaimer out there is that's the cause of polio. So I'm saying there are definite things that can happen if you expose yourself to human waste in that way.
I was thinking more about dog poop, but anyway, we're in the yard. There's natural fecal matter. Not literally eating globs of poop, to be clear. But my point is, germs are out there. kids playing in dirt and germs, they get exposed to all that stuff and their immune system responds and their strong immune system. So the again, when societal expectations start dictating to you, you know, just like we said before, there's only a certain way you can respond or you're considered, oh no, no, we're going to dismiss everything. So anybody, and I know there's crazies out there getting, you know, like, you know, somebody said they're putting micro whatever in the injection so they can, you know, it got really weird on all the conspiracy theories. So I'm not saying all that, but, and I'm not anti-vaxxer. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. You mentioned polio. We destroyed polio with a vaccine. I mean, that's amazing. So I'm not anti-vaxxer. I'm just simply common sense. We're talking about expectations, societal expectations, and that's really important. And that has changed over the years. The sharing of information, and it's like we can. It's like there's a hidden group of people that get to decide. Here's the narrative, and if you vary from the narrative, you're in trouble. You're wrong.
And that in and of itself is not only the topic, but it's also a problem.
Yes.
The reason I say it's a problem is because what that tendency does, that tendency of society to dictate certain norms, certain belief systems that everyone else is supposed to absorb and act upon, belief systems that are based on fear, that are based in, oh my God, some terrible thing is going to happen if everybody doesn't follow this. They're all also driven by falsehood. And the falsehood they're driven by is we're all better off if we all think the same.
Yes.
Which is not true. In fact, it's as far from the truth as you can get.
Yes.
Because the simple fact is any society that has ever tried to create uniform thinking has died.
Well, you see that a lot with the, you know, pronouns for people right now. And you have to think this way. If you, you know, I heard a lady the other day on a podcast I was listening to, and she felt she was, she said, I've been abused because you misgendered me. And I was like, I'm sorry to hear that. It's just a narrative that, and I'm not anti-gay. I'm not anti anything. I'm just, sure. It's words, and somebody accidentally called her she, and that upset her. And in fact, I probably just did it in calling her. I didn't mean that, but it's just something you're in a place you don't even know what to say. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, I was on a radio show one time, call-in radio show. They were going to interview me, and it was in California. The guy asked me what my pronouns were, and I was like, I don't know what they are. I mean, I didn't know what to say. And he apologized. He said, yeah, I should have warned you that, you know, nobody said anything. You know, I didn't mean it in a bad way, but I just didn't know what to expect at the time. It's sort of a new thing for me. So I don't mean anything negative, but you can easily be vilified for just suggesting something that is not the norm. Dave Chappelle, actually not a big fan of all this stuff, but he made some really good points. I mean, in comedy, he can't even joke anymore. I mean, I grew up with, as a child, I heard Richard Pryor. I heard Eddie Murphy. I just find it fascinating. They're offended by what these guys are saying. If you heard what Eddie Murphy and those guys went. They went. Sam Kinison. Do you remember him? Wow.
I remember Sam. Yeah.
I mean, those guys went hard. But today you're not allowed, and because it was comedy, you're sort of allowed that. So societal expectations really are dictating. It's interfering with. Free thought, I believe, is interfering with just how society operates. It's just a very odd time.
And to be fair, societies go through these things. Just because something is emerging doesn't mean it's taking over. It's not like this is the end of the world or anything like that.
Right. Right.
It's just we're identifying that things like this happen, that trends like this take place, and society tends to take on certain expectations as a result of these trends. Now, the question that I really had in mind when I posted this topic was, okay, we have these to deal with. How are we going to deal with them? I mean, we could sit here and we could complain about them, and to a certain extent, we've done that already, but that doesn't actually resolve them. So how do we deal with them?
Well, I deal with them by, you know, on a personal level, of being, you know, no disappointment when I have no expectations. The only person I have expectations of is me. And so on a personal level with expectations, I've got that down pat. You and I, we're looking at it, we're examining it, but I don't think either one of us has been complaining about it. We're just pointing out that's what's going on. On a societal level,
When you mention it, to a certain extent, there's a complaint involved because you mentioned it. So that's why I said
certainly. But you know, the idea that how do we deal with the bigger societal stuff? I think dialogue, open dialogue, people being able to really discuss things. I had a conversation one time with a young man. He's a football player, and he was during this time of kneeling for the national anthem. And he was kneeling for the national anthem, and he didn't, you know, what he was stating he was kneeling for is in his community of Baltimore, he had witnessed many, many unfair times of a lot of stuff happening, corruption in the police department, you know, a lot of his community was being arrested for things they didn't do. And his brother was actually killed by the police. There was no real investigation. So he had a tendency to look negatively. So his expectation of kneeling was to point out that the police are unfair to him. And that's why he was kneeling. But later, when I was talking to him about it, I said, but the people that are offended by that are people that have are not understanding your position, but you're kneeling to the flag that their kid fought in the war for, maybe died for, served his country, that may have lost a loved one during a war. And so they see you kneeling and they don't know you're kneeling for what you're kneeling for. They think you're anti-flag or anti-United States. And once we got there, there was a really good dialogue, and he decided he wasn't going to kneel anymore because he didn't realize he was doing that. And I think that's very important. I think it's really important to understand that. And in our time, the dialogue, I think, helps alleviate these societal expectations by not just seeing them, but not confronting them with anger and screaming, but just having dialogue. I think that's probably one of the quickest ways out of this is just to make it normal where we can have discussions without being triggered. Right now, I see Walt is off of the screen, so I know he will be coming back shortly. I'm assuming I'm still live, so I'll just keep going. But the expectations of society when it comes to how we behave and how the other things go on, that never changes until we change the dialogue that begins that in the first place. You slipped out on me there a little bit, Walt, but I kept going.
I appreciate that you did. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now, yes.
Yeah, my browser, every once in a while, my browser likes to take a little siesta, and it did just then, so I had to do a little come back. But thank you for that. I appreciate that. But carrying on with the thought that you're putting forward there, I like that. And I like the fact that what you're talking about is a dialogue, because dialogue is certainly one of the key pieces to how we do overcome these kinds of societal expectations. I wonder if we can also talk about how mindset plays a role in it. Because I do believe that a lot of, since many of these societal expectations, probably even all of them, are fear-based, therefore mindset becomes, I would think, our best tool, our best option, or at least our first option for overcoming a lot of these societal expectations.
I completely agree. My life is built on mindset. Mindset is everything. What you bring to the table, mindset-wise, is what you bring to your life. And I completely agree with that. So adjusting your mindset to, like I said earlier, you know, being able to realize everything doesn't have to be a trigger. When somebody disagrees with you, somebody doesn't see it your way, it's okay. I had this conversation with a client today. I mean, literally the name of our show is LOA Today. So I am a huge advocate of law of attraction. I don't need to defend that to anyone. People that think, Joel, you're crazy. I'm not offended when people say they're crazy. In fact, I endorse that concept. I clearly I have no problem with that. But I believe the law of attraction to be a fact. I live it in my life. It changed my life. I don't need to defend it. So I am impervious to anyone attacking my belief system because their attack doesn't matter. So mindset, the right mindset, doesn't allow for societal expectations to really get in your world.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And
yeah.
So now the question becomes, if you're dealing with a societal expectation that's messing with you and you're having trouble achieving mindset, are there any hacks you can do to kind of deal with it?
Well, it's a pretty broad question because I don't know exactly, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of how it most of what you allow to affect you, it will affect you. So the, you know, being able to be bulletproof, not being able to be triggered, there are sometimes, I'm trying to think of an example, but maybe societal expectations directly interfere with, you know, when it changes you, you're not allowed to do something because of that. That might be a problem that we can't fix. But most of it is just being able to adjust your mindset and not allow the opinion of others or the general thinking. Like, I know medicine wise, you and I were talking about medical stuff before we got on the air. Right. And the single most important thing to me in any interactions with the medical field is perspective and how you deliver a message. Years ago, I had a doctor that somehow, I don't know how this topic came up. He always gave me this long thing and about lifting weights and all the stuff that I do. And he said, well, you know, your lifestyle probably will allow you to live up to 100. You see, you probably have only a 7% chance of dying. And I said, well, why did you say it that way? Why don't you go with a 93% chance of living? And he truly said, well, it's the same thing. It's not. It's really not. You emphasize the dying and not the 93% chance of living. And
right.
it was this process in my brain that I was like, okay, that's the stuff that matters to me. The medicine side is, yeah, we need some of that occasionally. But I really need my doctor to understand the value of perspective, how you say things. It's not helpful for me to hear any of the negative connotations or the, you know, stuff. The mindset of the doctor is the most valuable interaction in medical work for me. I can draw my own blood. I have a company that I can have a go to the lab core, have my own blood tested. I don't need a doctor. I can do all that stuff. But I do need a doctor at times to help me go through it and see what it is, and identify things. And I do want their input. It's not that I don't have a medical degree. But I just get frustrated with, that's where a societal expectation is. You experience this, I believe, you know, the doctors having an opinion of a certain thing just basically saying, you're fine. And not taking into your individual settings and your body and what works for you. Because the medical expectation is you're within the range, you're good.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And we had an extensive conversation about that. I think I actually mentioned it in last week's show a little bit.
You did.
But the main takeaway for me is mindset, as it plays a role in dealing with societal expectations, among other things, is about developing a mindset that's strong enough to have a kind of a layer of built-in protection. Like, it's the same idea of build a thicker skin for yourself. You know, you're dealing with something that you know, you're dealing with somebody that you don't like the way they treat you or whatever. Grow a thicker skin.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not easy to do. That's what life experience is about, you know. But nevertheless, that's a big piece of it. We have to learn how to grow thicker skins. By the way, I'm going to. I can tell already. My browser is going to flip out on me, so I'll be back in about 30 seconds after I flip out. Just to let you know.
Okay, great. Okay, no problem. So, exactly, agreeing with you exactly on that, because that thicker skin concept, really not being triggered by the words of others, is one of the greatest things you can do for yourself. Being desensitized to what people say, being affected by that, the word, you know, the most basic thing we learn as a child is sticks and stones can break our bones, but words can't hurt us. Well, you know, we've become a society that allows words to hurt us. And that's, you know, I'm not being, you know, trying to be too judgmental. It's just simply, we have to become more internal in that sense, and not let outside forces like words and some of that to affect us on the level where we're triggered and have a bad quality of life. There's a term called codependence that, you know, when you're so codependent on someone, that's codependency is when your mood is dependent on the mood of another person. Yes. And the idea of developing a thicker skin prohibits you from being triggered by another person and not needing the approval of other people and knowing that you're on the right path, because there's a fear that somehow I'm doing this wrong, or it looks weird, or it looks different. And you have one of the things I love about middle school kids right now is I have my neighbor I've often mentioned before. He's 12 now, about to be 12. And he's got this same permed up hair, big poofy hair that every 12-year, when you go to the middle school right now, all the boys have this poofed out 12-year-old hair. It's just the style right now. So because the middle school is about being in the middle. It's about fitting in. It's not being,
right.
But I love the name middle school because it literally is about being in the middle. Yeah. You don't want to be any different, but yet, you know, like I told him, you know, he's a great kid. We talk a lot. He's a good looking kid. I said, bro, your hair is ridiculous. And he laughed. He goes, but that's what everybody else is doing. I go, but do what you want to do, but do it because that's what you want to do it. He'll get to that lesson. But right now he's doing that poofed out, you know, broccoli haircut or whatever you want to call it. And it's silly because every single boy in the middle school is doing that same haircut. Mm-hmm. And it's just that. Because that's a middle school expectation right now. So that's it, you know, when I was in middle school, you had to wear a certain pair of shoes, Converse with the shoes, Levi jeans, and an Adidas T-shirt. That was the uniform. And if you didn't wear that, you just were weird and whatever. It's like, yeah, you see that. So the idea of the expectations and living to the expectations of others always leads to disappointment of people. I had a really good talk with a young man the other day. He's choosing a college, and he wants to go to one school. It's a smaller school. His parents want him to go to another school because their perception is the other school is more prestigious.
Yes.
And that's, again, we go back to that previous expectation.
Yep. As you were talking about middle school, it also brought to mind an article I read. I read this within the last year. It was, I guess you could call it a study. It wasn't a study in the sense of a study where you have a large population of people being studied all at the same time for a particular test that you're doing or something like that. It was a study in the sense of, let's look at this population and see what we can learn from the population. It was more of a sociological type study rather than a medical type study or a science type study. And what was fascinating is they were studying kids in a middle school. Actually, it was here in Connecticut. It was down toward New York City. I don't remember which town it was. But they were studying these kids, and they were trying to get a handle on how the ebb and flow of being in middle school works, and who becomes the role models, and who are the followers, who are the cool kids, who are, you know, all that kind of stuff. They were figuring all that stuff out. And there are a couple of really interesting things that they identified. One was they identified who was the most popular kid in the entire class based on the feedback they got from the other kids.
Right.
An interesting dynamic happened here. It turns out that the most popular kid in the class was most popular because she was the one kid in the entire school who befriended one of the most unpopular kids in the school, and did it for no other reason than to befriend that kid. There was no ulterior motive. Everybody could tell it was just because that's what she was doing. Not only did that make her popular, but it established a trend in the school. And the reason this was fascinating is the number two kid in the school was liked in every way, except that one kid had not done the same thing with the unpopular kid that the most popular girl had done.
That
was the only differentiator, was that number two hadn't done what number one had done, and that's why number one was number one.
Right.
That's really interesting, because it shows a number of things. It shows how societal expectations come about, I mean, there's a society right there, a middle school population. There's definitely a society going on there. And that society came to a conclusion, in this case, a very positive conclusion, based on what the most popular kid in that society did.
Yes. Absolutely.
Now, of course, it works the other way, too. I mean, if you have the number one most popular person is doing something that's really kind of nasty, then that leads to a more nasty kind of societal expectation.
Right. I mean, middle school, one of the things, you better have good self-esteem if you walk into a middle school. Because they can be brutal, and they can also be very kind. But they tend to be pack-like, and, you know, they don't have a lot of individual thoughts when they're in a group. Everything is group. It's like, I want to be like everybody else a lot of times. And so that middle school is one of the most difficult times for a lot of people because of that. Then when you get into high school, there's less of that. And the college individuals start popping up all the time. Mm-hmm. The middle school mindset is really a societal study in expectations, because everything in middle school is expectations, and they have a lot of them. It's just, they spend a lot of energy. Everything happens, you know, a lot of drama, a lot of stuff happening. Several stories like this. I'll use probably the least inappropriate one, where, there's a lot of these, but, you know, somebody confides into somebody in middle school, something personal. And, you know, the person they confide in tells other people. It becomes viral within the school. And the person who really shares is an outcast now, and all that. And the person, you know, is betrayed. And so a lot of times they're very fearful of speaking up or saying something, or it's a very scary world. And middle school girls and can be so mean to each other. And boys can too, but the girls tend to. And so all of this is a study in expectations, societal expectations. Adults have it all the time where, you know, this is what everybody else is supposed to be doing. So retirement is a societal expectation. You know, it's something that, you know, your ultimate goal is to save enough money where you don't have to work. And so a lot of people think that's what they do. And then they retire and then they're miserable. And we talked about that before, the concept of ikigai in Japanese. You know, there is no retirement in Japan. You just go until you find out what you love and do it. And you do it till you go, until you're not here anymore. That's, you know, like I said before, that's how I'm going to go, in the gym or in my office. That's what I want to do. It's just what I will never retire. I don't have to work anymore, but I'm not going to stop. And this is something that I discard societal belief that somehow my reward is to stop doing what I love doing most. I don't understand that.
You also have a tremendous advantage that a lot of people don't have. You do something you love.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of people don't love what they do. Let's be honest.
Right. But you can, you know, you can understand the concept of, you don't have to do what you don't have to work in the factory forever, but the idea you're going to work in the factory for 30 years, retire and be happy, is unlikely. You need to find something else to do. I don't think you should do factory work your whole life, but you need something to keep you busy, the mind engaged, all that. You need a reason to get up in the morning. You need a reason to, I just can't imagine being retired. My brain feels like it would go to mush quickly.
I actually think about my dad. Cause when my dad retired, they retired to a beautiful lake in Virginia. You know very well, Smith Mountain Lake.
Yes.
They had a gorgeous property. It was the place my dad wanted to go to. My mom, of course, was there too. And it was beautiful in every way, except he didn't have his circle of friends that he used to have. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of time where he just had time on his hands. I mean, he would do all the stuff around the house. You know, he would do the yard upkeep, and he'd do repairs and all that kind of thing. But he wasn't doing the stuff that he used to love to do, because the population wasn't there. They were back in another part of the country that he used to live in.
Right.
And that was huge. I'll tell you honestly, my dad ultimately succumbed to symptoms related to Parkinson's disease, which is a pretty miserable thing to go through.
Yes.
And of course, they're still trying to figure out what drives Parkinson's. I personally believe there are environmental factors that are driving it. But the point that I'm raising is I wonder if he would have succumbed to Parkinson's if he had his circle of friends. I'm not sure that he would have. I think perhaps there would have been a shift of some kind that would have prevented that. Now, I can't prove that. I have absolutely no evidence that can prove that.
Yeah, I'm on board with you. I can't speak to that. And I'm sure somebody's going to hear this and say, oh, my God, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm telling you ahead of time, I do not know what I'm talking about, but I can tell you what I feel. You can email me if you want, but I don't know what I'm talking about. But what I feel is when you are in a place where you're not engaged, that you get up every day, you go do what you're supposed to do. And the body has a tendency to achieve that. If I go to the gym every day at my age and still be able to deadlift 500 pounds, my body, it shouldn't be doing that at my age, but I expect it to, and it's been doing it forever. So it will continue to do it until I quit doing it. So that's what happens. Now, when you take that urgency away or that demand on the body, then the brain, it's everything starts at shut down and happen faster. Atrophy happens in the brain. I really think that, I don't know if it would have cured it, entered it or whatever. And certainly I almost guarantee it would have delayed it greatly. Mm-hmm. If he didn't go to, you know, do that. And by the way, Smith Mountain Lake is beautiful, but he got out of what made him who he was. And again, societal expectations drive that. I told you before, last time I was in Florida at my island, on Anamaria Island, I always had the expectation that I will eventually be there. I'm just going to move to my house down there. I will do most of my coaching from virtually from the beach and all that, had all this stuff. And the last time I was down there, it was absolutely miserable. It was overcrowded. It was 100 degrees every day. It was miserable. It took 2 hours wait for every restaurant. The grocery store was packed. And I realized my island was not my island anymore. So my expectation of that island, you know, I've been on a search for another place now, because at some point I've got to live on water somewhere. So I'm looking for that hidden gem that's not overrun yet. But also where I'm at is fine for right now. I'm not in a rush to do that. But my expectation always had me there. When I realized that, my expectation, it's a random thing. And so a lot of times expectations, we don't even know why they're there. That's the other part about expectations. Sometimes they just get built in and we never evaluate that expectation anymore.
But that's part of what was in my mind when I brought up the example of my father, because originally we're talking about societal expectations. In the case of my father, his society was taken away from him. Well, it wasn't actually taken away. He took himself away from it.
Right.
But the point is, he was separated from what was his society.
Right.
So it's kind of like an inverse kind of societal expectation. It isn't so much what society expected of him. It's more like what he, on a subconscious level, expected from society and wasn't getting it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's countless examples of Bear Bryant, for example, football coach of Alabama.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He coached football, Walt, you know,
we're going to do this again, aren't we?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just let you know. So anyway, he was at Alabama for years, set the records, considered before Nick Saban, considered the greatest coach of all time. He retired, and 3 or 4 weeks after that, he literally died. Mm-hmm. Joe Paterno, Penn State, longtime coach.
Same thing.
Yep. Another retirement, died shortly after retirement. Had no medical issues before that, at least we were aware of. Was planning on coaching forever. He had a scandal go on. Really wasn't his fault, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. he got fired. Yep. He lost his point. So societal expectations, or it could be either direction, but you have to, I believe, internal expectations are deadly, and especially when they're set in ways of, you're not, when you get rigid in your expectations, that's a problem. Societal expectations are something that you can learn to accept and not participate in, but you have, as you're saying, develop that thicker skin to be able to go a little deeper and be able to run. I'm not, if you're going to buck societal expectations, you're going to get heat. And that's something, a lot of people aren't prepared for the heat. Like somebody said, Well, you know, some of the things you said can get you canceled. I'm sort of uncancelable. I can't be canceled. You know, so,
I can't imagine you canceled, to be honest. It doesn't. Yeah, really
well, fit. I mean, my clients don't care. My clients understand how I think. So that's where I make my living and don't need to work anyway. So all of that stuff is I do what I do because I love it. But at the same time, And I do admit, if you're working for a big corporation with a big job and you got to be really careful, you have to, the expectation, you can't say certain things. I heard somebody endorse some, had something, he worked for a corporation and he said something about abortion or something. And I don't remember the whole details, but literally a long time, it literally got fired over stating an opinion publicly. And just because it was not what the corporate world wanted to hear, you know, it was like he was whatever side he's on, it doesn't matter. But he said something and then it escalated and he went back down from it. They fired him. And it's, you know, all over words. It's amazing.
Well, that raises the next question, which is how do you deal with societal expectations at work? Because you don't have to be a CEO of a company in order to recognize that this can be an issue that can affect anybody. And not just this whole idea of cancelization, but all kinds of expectations can occur in a corporate environment, in a job environment. Expectations that are well beyond your control. The most you can do is just deal with them. So how do you deal with them?
Well, I mean, years ago, I had a period of time I was doing some consulting work for AT&T in Charlotte when I lived in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And I was doing some, you know, mindset stuff for their salespeople. It was really cool. And I enjoyed doing it. So I'm an independent contractor working for AT&T, right? They just like I'm doing, you know, no problem. I'm doing consulting, paid separately. I'm not an employee. So there was this young lady that was there that we had a really good connection. So the 5 days that I was there, her and I were talking and laughing and something like that. And so on my last day there, she came up and gave me her phone number. And she said, "Hey, I'd love to, you know, have some coffee with you." She knew I didn't drink. She's like, "Coffee or whatever." I said, "Yeah, I'll give you a call." So somebody witnessed that. So I got a call a week later. I didn't know what they're talking about. I said, you're not allowed to fraternize with fellow employees at AT&T. I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not an employee at AT&T. And he said, "Well, somebody saw your interaction and they were uncomfortable." I said, "She literally just gave me her phone number and said, call." And she says, "Yeah, we normally don't do that." I go, "Well, I don't work for you." And they said, "Well, we're just letting you know that if you ever come back and do something, you can't do that." And I go, "I don't think there'll be a problem now with me coming back. I don't worry about that." I mean, and this is the most benign thing in the world, Walt. There was no inappropriate talk. She simply said, "If you'd like to grab some coffee, I'd love to consider our conversation. I enjoy talking to you." That was it. But what a bizarre world that we live in that, you know, it's just so that corporate expectation is just if I were there, I could have been reprimanded or fired for what I consider one of the most benign encounters of my life.
It's also ironic because I can think of numerous instances when I did work in the corporate world, because it's been over 20 years since I worked there. But I can remember numerous instances where people met and married in the corporate
world.
And that wouldn't fly at all today. That would be, you know, verboten.
Yeah, I just find it amazing. It's like, again, it's this world where when you're in the corporate world, they have expectations and you, I think corporate America, you know, really sort of has painted themselves in a corner where, you know, you get very rigid thinking. You don't get the people thinking outside the box, the going forward people, because you get very, very rigid. And if you're going to, you know, when I'm a manager and, you know, I have employees with some of the companies I'm involved with, I love people to push back on me. I love ideas. I like people to disagree with me. That's how we get good ideas. And I am the first person, I'm very strongly opinionated. I love the stuff I believe in, but I also love to be challenged on those things because I believe my most productive times in management is when I get I have this group of people that I picked and I want their input. So I operate like, challenge me, Don't be afraid of me. Challenge me. Tell me, you know, you're wrong. Here's what I like. I like that. And that's not the norm. I can't imagine having incredibly talented people that are working with me in these companies that I would not want their opinion. I know what my opinion is. They're there for their opinion. That's what I want them for. That's big.
So it still raises the question though, because if you're working for a company like that, you basically have to come to a decision about something.
Yes.
The thing you have to come to a decision about is how far are you willing to go in order to keep the job?
Yes. And that's you have to make a personal decision based on that. And that's the part that's, do you shut your mouth and just accept it? Or do you just go on and do something else? And, you know, it's a shame it's that way, but it's, you know, there's been people that posted something and likely inappropriate. I'm trying to think of the scenario, but here's the overall thing. So this lady posted something derogatory about somebody and she got on the airplane. So her phone was off during the whole airplane ride. So it went viral. And by the time she got off the plane 3 hours later, she had a call from her boss firing her. You know, now I'm not agreeing with it. I don't remember what it was. I'm not agreeing with inappropriate posting, but literally costing your job because of, you know, it probably a joke in very bad taste, but nonetheless, I mean, it's just, so we live in a time of this cancel culture, which fuels expectations. So it's almost like you're being forced to accept this expectation and comply. And I'm just saying that's what's happening. So you're asking what you can do about it. Sometimes life has three options at any point in time: accept it, change it, or leave it. That's the only three options we ever have. So sometimes the answer is leave it.
Yeah.
It's leave it.
Sometimes.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes accept it might work too.
The way accept it can work is if, now I'm going to throw this out here. I'm going to spitball this. You tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
I think that the way that accepting it can work, well, there are a couple ways, but one way that comes to my mind is if I disagree with X, whatever the X is, you know, whatever the societal expectations of the corporations are, I disagree with this X, whatever it is.
Right.
But I decide that I'm not going to worry about X one way or the other. It's not going to bother me if X goes on. I'm just going to pretend that it's not there. I'm going to just,
right. You know,
and I'm just going to be happy within myself. And
right.
You know, and just anytime that somebody brings up X, I'm going to say something very kind and polite and move on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a strategy that works, yeah. I would think.
Well, that's also getting to the point that that's probably under the subcategory of getting thicker skin. Probably not being triggered by all these things too is a way to accept it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to fight every battle. You don't have to, you know, everybody tries to argue with you. You don't have to do that. So a lot of this is, you know, learning to, does this really matter? Do I really care? Do I like my job? If I really love my job, I'm making good money, I'm going to have more latitude and say, yeah, I mean, this is the only, you know, there's nothing that's perfect. And I'm not going to lose my job over this tiny little thing. And there's other times that maybe you can't do that. And that's why you can accept it, change it, or leave it. And you have to determine that yourself. But all of this stuff it gets down to the bottom line. What are you willing to do? Are you able to draw that line? Are you able to get a thicker skin? And realize societal expectations, you know, I don't know if they're going to increase or go down. I don't really know all those things. But nonetheless, all that I have internally with me is my mindset, my perspective. I have an incredible life. I am not affected by politics. I'm not affected by any of this other stuff. That's my mindset every day. It's very effective for me. And all these little battles and stuff that everybody chooses to fight I can't stop it. So I just allow it. And I'll hear this stuff. I'll have a client, and doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum, but one side will say, oh yeah, well, you know, this guy's crazy or that guy's crazy. I'm voting for this guy. I'm voting for that guy. You know, and I just say, okay, I don't get into the debate because why do I just, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to change their mind. I don't like either guy, so it doesn't matter. I don't. none of them are good, so I don't know. But it's just process of the brain that I blaming is a strong word, but I attribute a lot of this to the instant gratification and broadcast on Instagram and Twitter and all these. We have a viral environment where things go really get red hot really quick, and Lord, it can gain its own momentum, and it's bizarre to watch happen. It's sad to watch happen sometimes because it goes in such a weird direction. But ultimately, there's one person that is responsible for how we feel and what we do, and that's ourselves. And it's our job to manage that the best way we can and implement one of the three options of accept it, change, or leave it. And it's our job to figure that out. We're not going to make societal expectations change because we're having a podcast. We're looking at ways we can deal within those societal expectations and make it. And that's the key, because there's a narrative that we you have to do this. You don't have to do anything. Just the key is learning to accept it. When I get off the phone, turn my phone off after our interview tonight, after our podcast, and I have a choice if I interact with another human being, and except my kids going to come in a little while, but nobody else do I have to interview or talk to or interact with the rest of the night unless I choose to. Mm-hmm. So, that's where my power exists within me. And my response, I've learned to respond rather than react. Most people react to situations and that creates problems because that's an instantaneous, unthought out concept. Whereas responding is when you think through and say, I do a checklist. Does this really matter? If it really matters, and you'll be shocked at what doesn't really matter. I mean, if I look at the top 10 headline, things, what really matters, none of the stuff in the top 10 things mentioned didn't matter to me really deep down at all. It really doesn't.
Yeah. And I think that really starts to get at the nub of what I want to finish off the conversation today with, the idea that you mentioned earlier. You don't have, just because there's a fight doesn't mean you have to engage in the fight.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have to participate. You can observe it. You can feel one way or the other about it, but you don't have to actually fight. You can walk away from a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the most frustrating things you can do to anybody trying to debate or fight with you is to not engage them. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And
very effective.
Very effective. And, post actively on Facebook. My stuff is usually very generically positive, and I don't get into controversial stuff on my Facebook page. But every now and then I'll get a comment. And one time I had no idea, it's a law of attraction quote of some sort. This guy commented, "You're the most selfish man I know." And I had an option. I could delete it. I could argue with him, or I could just say, "Well, thank you."
Thank you. Yeah.
I went with thank you, and he later deleted me. I guess I don't know. I never heard from him again. But I'm thinking, who's this random dude that I barely? He's from my hometown. Don't really know him. He's called himself a spirit. I don't know the origin, but I didn't lose a lick of sleep over that or worry about it. I just simply said thank you, and it doesn't. Anytime I get one of those comments, I generally leave it up. I don't believe unless it's vulgar. And I'll just say thank you or say, well, appreciate your input or whatever. And it diffuses it because I don't go back at him. I could argue with him. Why dare you call me selfish? I think I'm the opposite of selfish. I don't care. I don't care what your opinion is.
My ex, as you know, is a former psychotherapist, and she used to tell a really cool story along the same line about what she would do when she was working with a client who had a tendency to get into fights and struggle and always, come out against something that she didn't like or whatever. And so she said, okay, we're going to play a little game here. And she'd pick up, she had a couch. I think, is that a requirement for a therapist to have a couch? I think it is. But
it's very weird. Very weird.
It is. I don't know why that is, but there it is. But anyway, she'd pick up a pillow from the couch and she'd throw it to her client. And her client would catch. She'd say, okay, now throw it back. And so her client would throw it back. And she threw it again at the client. She says, okay, now throw it back. And this time she let it fall to the floor. And she says, that's how you avoid a confrontation. You stop playing the game.
Stop playing the game. Yeah. When you have a confrontation, it's almost like a contract between two people. I'm going to respond and we're going to go back and forth. It, you shut down a conflict by not responding. Mm-hmm. It's such a great tool. It's such a great, it works every time. You know, you hear that. I know there's people, I'm not talking about fights in the street, that's a whole different category, but just conflict, verbal conflicts. And there's people that their whole way of dealing with life is through conflict. And mm-hmm. when they run across somebody like me, I'm like, I don't care. You're good. Whatever you got to say, you're going to say. I'm not going to change your mind. You know, it's the idea that by allowing, I love her concept, because it's a great example of, you know, one of the best things you can do is like when you have these conflicts everywhere. Just why don't we just stop participating? It's like an amazing tool. Just stop. Yeah. See what happens.
Yeah. It works really well. Really, really well.
It does. It's fantastic.
So hopefully we left listeners with a few ideas on how they can get control back of their lives so they aren't so influenced. Influenced isn't even the right word. So controlled by societal expectations.
Yes. Because
that control is a miserable place to be. And it's a great skill to learn how not to be controlled by it.
Well, exactly. You have what kind of car do you drive? There's just so many factors out there that inundate us with that. And, you know, it's learning to just become really comfortable in yourself, do what you love to do. I only hang out with the people that I love and care about and, you know, and people that really energize me. I don't force myself into situations with people I don't want to be around. I just learned that. I have a family member that, you know, my mom, when she passed away, she has family members left and, one of them, we never really got along too much. So he called one time and said, hey, we didn't know if you want to come down. This is that my mom passed away and spend some time. I said, look, I really appreciate the call. I said, but to be honest with you, I've never liked you. You never liked me. And I said, so why don't we just, since mom's gone, why don't we remove the expectation of we need to continue your relationship? And he said, you know, I really appreciate that concept. He said, you're right. I don't like you either. But it was very cordial. So I wish you well. If you ever want to reach out, feel free to. We've never spoken since. And it's okay.
That's fabulous. Yeah, I love that.
Because there was a societal expectation, because we have blood relations, you know, that we're related by blood, that somehow we're supposed to interact.
Right.
And
right.
We're diametrically the opposite people. And I just, there's no point in doing that. And it was very cordial, and it just stated we only ever talked before because mom, she's not here. So let's not waste another minute of cell battery in discussing this. Let's just get out of here.
It's a great place to leave it. That's good. Yeah, So thank you very much, Joel. I'm laughing now. I can hardly wait till next week. This is gonna be fun,
I'm sure. Yeah. All right, buddy. Good to see you again. Thanks to the audience.
All right. Thank you to all of our listeners everywhere. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.